It's where one person has to pick one topic, and they have to articulate that topic within 20 seconds. And the key to the active listening component is the listener must then repeat word for word everything that that person said within that 20 seconds.
Are you familiar with that process known as active listening? Well, it's a must-understand concept if you want to have good communication in any relationship, and we're going to get a crash course in it on today's edition of Come Receive the Light as we continue to ask the question, am I being heard?
But what they stumble with is they don't get the details of the message, and their brain tries to formulate, what was the message? So they change all the wording, and they try to get the message. And oftentimes they'll get the message, but they've stopped with all of the actual words, and they try to summarize it. That's not active listening.
This is going to be a fun broadcast today on Come Receive the Light. I've already listened to the content, so I can promise you that. And as a matter of fact, we have so much content, we're going to divide the main interview for this week into two parts and play the balance of it next week. If you want to hear again any of the Come Receive the Light broadcasts, you can go to our website. That's myocn.net. Welcome to the program. I'm Mike Trout. Our host is Father Christopher Metropoulos, and we'll hear from him in just a moment. If you're brand new to Come Receive the Light and the Orthodox Christian Network, or as we call it, OCN, you can find out all about us when you go to that website. Again, it's myocn.net, and we'd love, of course, to know that you're out there. Well, we're also going to share a quick conversation about homeschooling, Orthodox style. And the guest that Father Chris is going to talk with comes to us from the St. Raphael Orthodox Online Homeschool Project, and his name is Dr. James Taylor.
James, nice to have you with us.
Thank you very much, Father. It's great to be here.
You know, what jumped out at me right away was that you offer courses for older children. You actually have nursery and elementary curriculums. I mean, at such a young age, what do you think can be gained from a specifically Orthodox education?
Well, we have to maybe redefine what Orthodox education is, and certainly we don't have time to do all that now. Mm-hmm. But I would say this, all the especially to homeschool parents, that all the subjects of a curriculum are familiar to you, every one of them. But there is the freedom to go to places Orthodox in teaching those without being preachy or, catechizing math or catechizing science. Mm-hmm. But it's the ambiance, that is to say, the feeling even, if you will, of that this is an Orthodox place where we can all meet and we are free to digress to those subjects wherever we see the need to. That would be the first thing. So, and the other thing is that particularly this fall, it's going to be an integrated curriculum, which I've been working with for most of my professional life, and that is where each subject speaks to the other in some kind of way. And what that means is that we recognize the truth that is in science and the truth that's in history and the truth in beauty and so on in literature. And in this way, it all coheres and it makes sense. It all ties up.
Well, let me ask you this, because there are people that homeschool down here in our area, some that send their kids to private school, some that send their children to public school. So I guess the real question I would ask you is why homeschool? What's the reason not to use a public or private school system, in your opinion?
Generally speaking, I don't think this is anything novel or new to say that public education, and I would say education in general in the West, and maybe particularly in America, has just simply slipped below standards that anybody who is now 40, 50, 60 years old knows that that's been quite a slip indeed, just in academic standards. Then the public school has also become the arena, the venue for pushing certain social agendas that are not consistent with Orthodoxy, spirit or letter. And so combined, it's just becoming less and less a favorable place for Orthodox families to place their children. God bless every one of them that are doing it, because hey, you got to do what you have to do out there, and count on the home and the love of the home to see you through. And I know many cases where that is, in fact, the case.
There seems to be, and you can correct me if I'm wrong here, a growing homeschool movement across the United States, not just among so-called social conservatives. Can you tell us about that Orthodox segment of the movement? What's happening there?
Well, the very reason I started the school, the main reason is because I think I've been on the timeline long enough to read the tea leaves. The Orthodox homeschool movement, if you will, is in a stage that resembles what I saw the Protestants and Catholics doing about 20 or 30 years ago. And, of course, then they didn't have anything organized very much. Now, of course, they are organized in their particular ways. But Orthodox families, rather, in America seem to me to be at that place, at a juncture where access to Internet learning, or at least using the means of the Internet to come into their homes, could be a real assistance. And I think that they are at that stage where others were 20 years ago, but that doesn't mean they're behind at all. Starting now, there's a great opportunity to use this as an assistance program, an enrichment program for what they're already doing. So I think I'm catching it right at the right time. It sure looks that way.
One of the questions that I hear often about the homeschooling, because a lot of young parents come to me and ask, you know, what should I do with my children? They say to me, you know, you father and your wife, you've raised six children together. How have you done it? And I tell them with lots of mistakes, unfortunately, but we do the best we can. A friend of ours, I heard, was considering homeschooling for her children for a lot of different reasons. But she was worried about her children not being able to adjust when they went to college. That said that they felt that maybe in homeschooling they would be sheltered. How do you respond to something like that?
Yes, that is a universal question that homeschoolers have been dealing with for many years. As you inferred a while ago, regardless of whether they're Orthodox or social conservatives or whatever. Well, the statistics, as far as I can tell, and this is a anecdotal survey, but I've dealt quite a bit with registrars at colleges and universities over the years. And the last time I talked with them about this question, said that, at least in this area that I'm speaking about, the Midwest and the Southern Midwest, is that they're very, very happy to see homeschoolers coming because they know a number of things. They can anticipate a number of things. One of them, that they know how to learn. And you know, they know how to be a student. Two, they tend to be more mature. And three, simply, I don't know whether they're more intelligent or not, they tended to say to me, but they certainly make good grades once they're in. Now, there's always an adjustment, and there's always the exception that doesn't have anything to do with homeschool or if they'd been in a expensive prep school. There's going to be always some people that don't, it doesn't work out. But the shift is more than in numbers, Father. I think I can say that safely. The shift in homeschool landscape is also one in can-do, you know, abilities beyond high school going into college. I certainly know the registrars that I have spoken to, and that's all the way from Hillsdale College, a very excellent liberal arts school, to some of even the junior colleges in my neighborhood. They like applications from homeschool students.
What makes the programs that you offer specifically Orthodox, quote-unquote?
Yeah, I mentioned that, or at least touched in that direction earlier. It's the freedom. It would be the first reason I would put forth. That is, I don't feel blocked myself from going from, let's say, we're reading Tom Sawyer in one class, and a student somehow talks about mischief or something like this, and then also makes a connection with something in the liturgy. You see, in another program, and I've taught online for nearly 13 years to a variety of different students and backgrounds, I didn't always have that liberty, and the students didn't always have that freedom, you know, to go for it. So that would be the first reason. The second reason is more mysterious. It has to do with inspiration It has to do with the Holy Spirit, because it's all spontaneous. I don't have any notes. I don't know what's going to be done next. The students surely don't have any notes. And that is, to my way of thinking, is not exclusively, but is certainly, I would say, an Orthodox thing, to trust that we're going to find the truth. We're going to find the goodness and beauty of something about science or history. And that's just an ambiance that fills the class. It's difficult to say this without sounding, secretive, mm-hmm. because it isn't at all. But it really is something that needs experience. In other words, if parents or anybody could listen in to one of our classes, which would be fine with me, you'd see. It's a kind of come and see thing. And I know that probably isn't a very satisfactory answer. The second part is, anyway. But it's true.
Very good. Could you tell our listeners more about the St. Raphael's House and where they can get the information?
Sure. The best place is the website. It is www.raphaelschool.org.
Thank you, Dr. James Taylor.
Thank you very much, Father.
And that website, again, for St. Raphael School is raphaelschool.org. And Raphael, of course, is R-A-P-H-A-E-L, then the word school.org. You'll find a link to that on our website at myocn.net. That's myocn.net. And if you'd like to listen to this program again, you can do that when you go to the website. I especially think that may be true because of the upcoming conversation we're about to have. It's just part one of a two-part discussion our host, Father Chris, will have with this guest. And if you missed either program, or if you miss either program, you can always go to the website, myocn.net, and listen again. Here's Father Chris.
We welcome to the program today Dr. Ari Christofidis. We're here to talk about how to become better listeners, and Ari's going to give us a crash course. I don't know, is that humanly possible to have a crash course on listening?
No. But it's a good start, though.
Okay. Well, we all know that, well, at least we should know, that listening is important. But how often or how long do people actually do it? What is your experience as a counselor?
My experience has been that almost every single person that I've worked with has poor to despicable listening skills. And I don't mean that in a derogatory way. I just mean that we've kind of come into this routine in our lives of being a little bit careless when it comes to listening to another person.
Why is that, do you think?
Well, I think that people are less patient these days, mm-hmm. and they're wanting to get their point across, mm-hmm. more than wanting to understand the other person's point. So one of the things that typically happens is the person who's supposed to be listening, they hear one or two key words that sparks a reaction inside of them, and they are processing their response back without listening to the rest of that person's mm-hmm. statement.
And oftentimes we think we're listening, but we're actually preparing, like you just said, of what we're going to say next. So thinking about how that person is right or wrong and having to come back at them, right?
Yes, yes.
But that's not listening.
No, it isn't. It's reacting.
It's reacting. My grandfather used to tell me, in Greek he would tell me, you have two ears and one mouth, which means you're supposed to listen more and speak less.
I love that.
And
yes.
He didn't have a third grade education, but he knew what he was talking about.
Yes, he did.
Why is it when a person is talking to their spouse, the other person jumps in immediately, finishes the sentence, goes back 5, 6, 7 years to how they've been heard about something, and then goes back to the topic, and then just eviscerates the other person?
Right.
What is it that happens there? What snaps in a person?
What I see is, and this is why I use a specific type of tool here, what's happening is that the person says something, a word that triggers an emotional reaction in the other person, the receiver. So the spouse who initiates the conversation will say something mm-hmm. that has typically a negative emotional reaction or a memory. And instead of listening to the full sentence or the full comment, the spouse immediately reacts emotionally and shuts that person down, and that's where typically couples have arguments. Mm-hmm. So it's typically the ego is being bruised. Mm-hmm. There's a lack of humility. It's learning to justify yourself. And when you hear something that goes against you, the person becomes defensive and tries to then counter that. And so one of the things that people need, and it's not just in couples relationships, is they need to quiet down that emotional reaction. And as a Christian, they need to practice humility versus allowing their ego to be offended by something and then trying to defend that ego. Mm-hmm. Okay. And so it's very important for Christians to say, wait a minute, I need to understand why is this person telling me this versus saying, how dare they?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, there's a specific technique I've heard of called active listening. Can you tell us what that is? You may have intimated that a bit in the beginning, but let's talk about it.
Well, I kind of have tweaked and used a little bit of my own over the years methods with active listening. But the way I present active listening to my couples, and this is, again, for anybody. It's mm-hmm. not just in a marital relationship. It's where one person has to pick one topic, not a laundry list, and they have to articulate that topic within 20 seconds. And the key to the active listening component is the person receiving, the listener, must then repeat verbatim, word for word, everything that that person said within that 20 seconds. And that's the active part of the listening. And so I kind of tell them, not being exact scientifically, but I said, you're activating the listening part of your brain, and by concentrating so much, you are calming down the emotional side of your brain. Mm-hmm. And therefore, you have to then focus on every word and repeat every word like a robot. Oftentimes, spouses will begin that practice of active listening, but they will then change the words, especially the pronouns. You said this, and I stopped them. I said, no, don't change the pronouns. Say I as though you're speaking as them, as that person. Mm-hmm. So the act of listening is really focusing and concentrating on the words and not allowing the emotions to take over.
And what happens in that process? Take us to the next step after that.
Well, the next step is, and this is what is fascinating for me every time I do it in my office, is what you hear then is now when I say, okay, stop, the listener now tries to remember word for word what was said, and they often stumble. And they stumble because, of course, they're just learning a new kind of technique. But what they stumble with is they don't get the details of the message, and their brain kind of tries to formulate, what was the message? So they change all the wording, and they try to get the message. And oftentimes they'll get the message, but they've stopped with all of the actual words, and they try to summarize it. That's not active listening. And one of the reasons we do active listening is, I'll give you another example with a couple. There was a very serious situation that occurred between a husband and a wife, and the wife wanted to talk about this very, very deep emotional issue, which brought them into therapy in the first place. And I said to them, and I've said this to many, many couples before, we're not ready yet. We're not ready yet to go there because you need to learn how to communicate and listen to each other. So they were patient for a little while, two or three sessions, but then this wife really wanted to talk about this situation. And I said, well, okay, I respect your wish. Let's give it a try, but let's use active listening. Well, she couldn't get through two exchanges with her husband because the emotions totally took over. She was getting extremely angry. And then she finally recognized why she was not ready yet to talk about that subject matter, because she had not calmed herself enough, wasn't able to keep those emotions at bay and listen to him. She was angry with him. So you have to practice this in order to help yourself communicate with your spouse rather than argue with your spouse. So active listening really helps train the mind to listen versus react emotionally.
Well, let me ask you this then, Ari. Why is listening important? I mean, why can't we just do what we want to do whenever we want to do it and lay everybody in a wasteland after it? I'm kind of answering my own question, but I want to ask you the question. I mean, just let me talk, and I don't care about anybody else.
Well, then you have chaos.
Mm-hmm.
Plain and simple, it's just chaos.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we have in family situations today. There's a lot of chaos because no one's listening anymore.
Right. They should know how to listen to their iPods, iPads, iPhones, Androids, though, don't they?
Yes.
iTunes,
yes.
All that stuff. Boy, we load up our playlists. But the real playlist of life is something that which is much more precious in the eyes of God, of course, is never really heard, is it?
No, and I think part of one of the themes here that is often missing when we talk about listening is the theme of control. And oftentimes, if I'm doing a family session with four or five or six family members in the room, it's everyone wants to control the situation. They want to control the dialogue. And no one's wanting and understanding the purpose and the importance of listening to each family member.
Mm-hmm.
And what I often become is a referee. And I have to, you know, put my hands up and say, time out, because everyone wants to control the dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
No one wants to listen. And that's why in families there's so much upheaval and lack of communication, good communication, because as we said a moment ago, there's chaos because no one wants to listen. And everyone wants to control the dialogue.
Okay. Now, some people, from what I know, complain about this technique because they see it as a formulaic, unauthentic, awkward. How would you respond to that, Ari?
Yes, I also hear that very often. And I do say to them, yes, this is going to be very awkward. It's not natural. But what I say to them is I'm not expecting them to spend the next week talking like this with each other. I'm asking them to practice the tool 10 minutes a day or every other day to get better at becoming a good listener. But because what happens is, you're right, it is awkward and it's not natural. So
mm-hmm.
active listening, what happens is if they can just train themselves to be a better listener through the practice of the technique, they find themselves slowing down, being more respectful, and in the natural flow of communication day to day, things do all of a sudden become better. So it's not as awkward anymore. But yes, it is an awkward way to talk or speak, but it has to be done because they need to learn how to be better listeners.
So this is a technique to get us into better listening land, if you will.
Yeah.
And not necessarily something that couples do all the time, is it?
Correct. Yeah.
Okay.
No, I don't expect them to do it all the time. It's funny, I'll give you a quick story. A couple had come back from a family vacation, and they had already been practicing this technique for, I don't know, 3-4 months. And they came into the session. They said, "Oh, Ari, we want to tell you, we love this tool because we were swimming in the middle of the ocean, and we decided instead of getting into an argument about where we were going to have dinner tonight on our vacation, we decided to use the tool. And we didn't get angry at each other, and we made a good decision on where we're going to eat that night." They said, "Fantastic. If you're in the middle of the ocean and you're using the tool to keep from arguing, great. Use it however you want, whenever you can."
Be interesting. Were they swimming at the time, or were they on a boat? I wonder how they did that.
And we'll pick it up from there. That's just part one of the conversation with Dr. Ari Christofides. And Father Chris will be back next week with the balance. You can hear both broadcasts when you go to the website at myocn.net and click on the Come Receive the Light link, or CRTL. Our host is Father Christopher Metropoulos each week, and I'm Mike Trout. And remember to always have faith in what you listen to.